This is CliffCentral.com.
Grant, I need to make a critical business decision. We've been expanding rapidly, and my gut feel tells me that we should be investing for growth. But I need to put some financial science behind that gut feel of mine.
Don't you have a financial manager or director that can help you with that?
But isn't that rather expensive?
It doesn't have to be. Why don't you contact the finance team? They're a consultancy that can provide you with a part-time financial manager or director at a fraction of the cost of a full-time resource.
Go to thefinanceteam.co.za.
Welcome to our Business Masterclass, the first show for 2018. I'm Richard Angus, CEO of The Finance Team, your part-time financial executive solution. Joining me in studio as part of our panel is Leandi Stritter, a business coach and guide from Moraes Corp.
Welcome. Thank you, Richard.
In this first half hour, our business skills conversation is brought to you in association with USB Ed. Today, we're back on the ethics show, and we're going to be talking about the theme ethics activists and the need for these people in our lives. Please remember our hashtag keep ethics alive, our hashtag keep ethics alive, all one word. Joining us in studio, as always, on the ethics show is our guest, Cynthia Schumann of the Ethics Monitor. Cynthia, welcome.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you for taking the time to be with us. I know that this is a huge investment in time for you. You've been with us for the last 6 months, talking about ethics on a monthly basis. But if I look back at where we've come from in terms of the last 6 months of last year and just the issues that we faced and the challenges that we had as a country, as we've always said, you know, the Gupta leaks, the gift that keeps on giving with all of the stuff coming out every few weeks, it definitely gave us enough stuff to think about and talk about.
Indeed.
But I think, you know, we're now at the point, and it leads quite well to today's theme about ethics activism. What is it and why is it needed? I saw at the beginning of, end of November, beginning of December, an announcement was made by Larry Dippenaar as he stepped down from First Rand as chairman.
Yes.
He retires as an official member, I think, of the board at 70, which is this year is his birthday. And he in his stepping down, was quite outspoken for a business person. It was one of the first times that, or not the first time, but one of the times where I saw a very strong commentary that First Rand would be stepping away from doing business with people and with companies that were implicated in these various issues that we've had in the country in terms of state capture and the likes. And I read into that, you know, so they definitely will not be doing business with people like SAP, McKinsey's. I don't know where MultiChoice featured on that one, so whether you're going to be seeing MultiChoice feeds into First Rand and FNB branches, probably not.
Yes,
you definitely won't be seeing ANN7 on any screens in the First Rand stable. And Larry was quite, and having hailed from that environment, I know Larry as a person, and I read the article and I thought to myself, you know what? He has a business leader who lives his values and his values as a person. And in my mind, I'm going, he has an ethical call by a business leader, and he's putting it out there and saying, this is where we're at. We're done with this and we're not going to participate and enhance the capabilities of these entities. And he's taking a very public stand on that. And yeah, I think I must say I openly and publicly maybe should commend Larry for that, because I think that's and I wish more business owners would do exactly that. So, I mean, when we get to this question of ethics activists, I mean, that's not an ethics activist. That's just taking a moral stand and an ethical stand as a business person. I guess you could say he is almost being a bit of an activist, because many business people are not taking a stand. What is an ethics activist? Tell us who these people are.
well, let me tell you how I got to coining the concept. We, of course, all recognize that being a good ethical role model is important. And I think the example you use of the First Rand Group and Lur in particular represents being a great role model. And really, given what has happened in our country now over more than a year, but, you know, let's not go backwards, I really looked at it and said being an ethical role model is, of course, necessary. But the classic one-liner, I don't think it's sufficient given the context. And so the term ethics activist really comes from a great recognition of the truly awesome social activists we've had in this country who literally fought, as I always say, day after week, after month, after year, after decade, who continued to stand up and speak up for what was right. And, you know, it's thanks to that that we have the democracy we have. Not a perfect one, I grant you, but nonetheless. But going back to those social activists, they were visibly, visually outspoken on every single occasion. Hmm. And looking at, unfortunately, the huge dramas and scandals that we've had playing out last year and even prior to that, I think that being a good role model is not enough. I think we have to move into that space of what I'd call an ethics activist who literally stands up every time, all the time. I would often add, irrespective of the potential negatives of standing up and speaking up for what's right. And I personally think we have a huge need of that.
Hmm. Now, I mean, for me, you know, taking an ethics position as an individual is often easy. But taking an ethical position, let me call it as an organization, I think is also quite a change of gear, because now everybody in the organization is part of that position. If I look at, let's go back to the Lowry example, that clearly positions first Rand in terms of, you know, the expectation. And I looked at that, and I'm sorry to say, but I had to contrast that with, for example, where KPMG is right now.
Yes.
Okay. The promised investigation that still hasn't happened, things that haven't kind of hit the ground, and I kind of go, you know, that worries me a little, you know, and I go, if you're going to, and the CEO of KPMG publicly stated we're going to have these inquisitions and reviews, yes, and all the rest, and we're going to see where this goes, and it's been quite silent after that, and I kind of go, well, one, you know, important thing to manage when you create the expectation and the perspective that you are going to do something about what has been absolutely categorized as a failure in your corporation. Don't then back off and leave a vacuum, because that vacuum is destroying of KPMG. And I anticipate that there will be many, many more requests for them to step away from organizations purely on the back of, well, I haven't heard anything.
Well, you see, that's the catch. When the minute we offer that we're going to do something, and then we even put a time frame to it.
Because they did put a time frame.
Then we've created expectations whether we intended to or not. When, on top of the debacle that this follows, when those expectations are not met, please let's not be surprised when it exacerbates the situation, which I think is exactly the case. But I think your bigger point is very relevant. At an individual level, perhaps that's more straightforward to be ethical. I just wish it was happening more. But at an organizational level, we really have to then look at the huge factor of leadership will, much as we would speak of it in the public sector, much as we'd speak of political will. Mm. In the absence of leadership will, political will, ethics is going to remain an interesting little luxury that there'll always be a reason why we can't afford it.
Mm, yeah. Now, one of the things that I want to just raise, and it's something that arose in one of our other shows, I'm bringing it up here from an ethical perspective, because I actually think that there's a crossover here, because we had recently the data leak that happened in South Africa.
Yes.
And we did a show fairly recently towards the end of last year where we were talking about protection of personal information, and we had the CEO of Dracore Data Sciences on the show with us to talk about, you know, views on it. And Dracore unfortunately got labeled in the whole data leak scenario as being potentially the source of the data leak, which was subsequently revealed not to be the case.
Yes.
But what was quite scary was a whole lot of allegations were made by people in the press, certain people in the press, and yeah, the National Credit Regulator swooped in, turned them, literally almost shut the business down, turned off their ability to get data from TransUnion ITC, launched an investigation which took weeks and weeks, and to my knowledge, I don't think has potentially even been resolved yet, put a small business under huge strain. And then when I step back and I look at this and I go, hold on a second here, let me just understand. And I asked the questions in the show. And by the way, I asked the journalists involved, or the journalist involved, for commentary on what he had stated. A gentleman by the name of Tefu Mahapi from, I think it's iAfrican is the blog space that he uses. And he refused to even respond to my requests for response, you know, for a view. And what was even more interesting was he basically blocked me on Twitter, so he clearly doesn't want to engage with me on the facts. And I kind of looked at this and I went, hold on a second here. Here's this guy who's holding up the, you know, let's call it the ethics. We can call him an ethics activist, saying, you know, protection of personal information, and it was compromised. He didn't check his facts, from what I can see. He joined a whole lot of dots that I question how he joined them, because he got to Drake or Data Sciences when in fact were multiple other institutions that were could potentially have been raised as potential interested or connected parties. He never went after anybody else or engaged with anybody else. What was interesting was that he didn't engage TransUnion ITC as the data provider either, and he definitely didn't engage Jigsaw Holdings, who were the true owners of the IP address where the data leak actually occurred.
Yes.
And I looked at this and I went, hold on, here's a guy who's a blogger who carries this activist, an investigative journalist activism type of coverage, so to speak, or naming convention, but he doesn't seem too interested in getting the facts. And he was the one who wrote, you know, is Drake or Data Sciences responsible for the data leak? When it was subsequently revealed that it wasn't Drakor and it was in fact Jigsaw Holdings who had left data unprotected on their servers, he didn't say a thing about Jigsaw and he never retracted his statement. So here you've got the National Credit Regulator acting, closing down a business's ability to operate, a small business, and you have the activist basically ducking any sort of accountability and conversation about the choices he was making. And I looked at this and I thought, sure, you know, I'm all for the activists getting involved, understanding and probing. But there's also a part of me that goes, there are also some fine lines in activism as a, and I think maybe that's what I want to talk about is from an, you know, we talk about ethical or ethics activists. There's also ethical behavior around how activists in ethical space and others conduct themselves.
It's an excellent example.
You know, so the ethics of the ethical activist. Try that one on, Bazaar. Yes. Say that quickly 10 times. You know, I was shocked that he didn't comment, okay, for the show. It was quite telling that he wouldn't give me comment. I emailed him and gave him an opportunity to give me written responses, and he didn't. I emailed him a second time. I tweeted to him and said, look, we're doing, you know, the show's going live. I need some comment from you. And he just ignored me. The only thing he did do was block me on Twitter. So I'm going like, okay, that's really interesting. That's an interesting response from somebody who's trying to take the moral high ground of activism.
Yeah. But for me, what it also speaks to is that the hugely important role of ethical behavior, whether we want to call them activists in this particular example, I think when we look at the media, and I mean the media very broadly, ranging from investigative journalism through to social media, being ethical there means you don't have a part-time relationship with the truth.
Mm.
you definitely have to take this seriously. And unfortunately, what an instance like that does is it lends credibility to throwing out the line of these media people, social media, look how irresponsible they are, when on the other hand, we can look at the fabulous work that investigative journalists did last year in uncovering huge ethical scandals, not least under the banner of state capture. Mm. And so There's hugely valuable work being done there. But what we need to add is that to the extent that those investigative journalists can well be regarded as activists, their effectiveness actually rests on being ethical.
Yeah.
But it risks being eroded by these rogue examples.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think for me, you know, Tefo Mohapi, in what he did and how he engaged, impacted a small business.
Yes.
Okay. He clearly didn't take on people that could sue him heavily and hit him with huge libel cases. He knows that, hey, look, what's the chances of a relatively small business taking me on and winning in court and I'll drag this out and whatever else. The other thing that was quite interesting, and I think for me, it was linked to the same case, was he was actually fed information from a hacker by the name of Troy Hunt from Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Troy claims the space of what's called a white hack or white hat hacker.
Yes.
So not a black hack. Black hat, which is, you know, for, let's call it, for gain and criminal type of purposes. A white hack. Hacker is somebody who works for, you know, let's call it registered institutions like Microsoft, Oracle, the likes, and they go around doing penetration tests and looking for data that's left all over the show that shouldn't be, and really almost, once again, an activist in terms of data security. What kind of got me interested when I saw all of this stuff flowing from Tefo was, well, Troy is an expert in this field. A simple search as to who owned the IP that he was finding data at would have pointed him to Jigsaw Holdings right at the start. Okay. Why didn't he go and investigate this properly before, let's call it, setting upon a particular storyline with Tefo and feeding a certain agenda?
Yes.
And, I had to ask myself the question, you know, what was the agenda here? And, I mean, I publicly will say, what was the agenda from Tefo Mohapi and Troy Hunt in terms of fingering Drake or data sciences? Because they were, in my opinion, from what I saw when I did a quick web search, I found at least four or five other companies which had exactly the same data headers that they were asking about, that they asked Drake or about. So that wasn't exclusive. At that point, Tefo would not have known that Drake or, in fact, had a historical data services agreement with Jigsaw, okay, which they've never denied. And quite frankly, they would have known at that point that Jigsaw was in fact the source of the problem. You know, I don't see any engagement between Troy and Jigsaw. I don't see any engagement between Tefo and Jigsaw. It's kind of, I mean, it went so far as Tefo saying to Drake or Data Sciences, you must take the site down. And I'm like, hold on, if you're this technology blogger and you don't know that somebody cannot take down somebody else's IP and site, hello? You know, question mark here, credibility. So, you know, I kind of looked at all of this and I thought to myself, we are so quick, and I guess it goes to this whole activism issue of fake news.
Yes.
You know, for me, honestly, it made national headlines and Drake or Data Science has got splashed all over national media. But fundamentally, that was fake news, guys.
Yeah.
And I look at this and I go, okay. So, you know, Tefo Mohapi joins the ranks of ANN7 and a few others where, you know, it's just really questionable where this kind of value set goes.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, how does one almost draw the line as the public in knowing where, and as a business owner, knowing, you know, where do you draw the line around activism? What is almost good activism and what is bad activism? You know, what should your employees be doing if they want to be activists in terms of inside your organization for good ethics? I mean, let's get on to that question. What should employees inside a corporate, for example, or a state enterprise or whatever it may be, do when they need to be activists in terms of doing the right thing? What should they be doing, Cynthia?
Well, I'd like to go back to your previous question of what's good activism, what's bad activism. And if one had to define it broadly, I would say the example you've used speaks to it perfectly. Good activism is where you're seeking to benefit those around you and those who have need of empowerment and upliftment, be they employees, citizens, or the like.
And everybody's data being leaked publicly, definitely in my book, ticked the box. So no issue with somebody taking up the cause on that one.
Yeah.
No objection there.
But of course, bad activism is where you're using a hot topic, a topic that you know will get publicity, and you're using it for a measure of self-gain, whether that is your sort of, you know, 1 week of fame and you know, a better Google ranking at the end of it. And that, for me, is the distinction. When, as activists, we are working to improve our circumstance, our surroundings for others as well, then, for me, that is a key distinction. The minute we're into the pursuit of personal gain, of personal recognition, I add, in many cases, at any cost, let's be clear that you may be able to call it activism, but ethics is not part of what goes with that. I wouldn't even want to call it activism, because then I'm just looking at manipulation, as a word that comes to mind, again, strongly for that personal gain.
An experience I've recently had, and I was just reminded of character, the value of character. And it's interestingly, it's ethics, values, character, all of these things have come up in business discussions, in personal discussions. It's been, I think, something that I've also been noticing in the, you know, sort of social media platforms, which is becoming more and more sort of focused on and highlighted. So at least by mere virtue of seeing these things on social media, it is becoming sort of, it's coming to light, and we are starting to have this dialogue. But we definitely need to have a lot more dialogue, I believe. And I just sort of wonder, this morning I was with a gentleman, and he said to me, you know, he described an experience that he was having, and this is not so much in line with the media behavior that we've just seen and what's happening in the macro or in our economy and on a larger scale in the macro economy. But like he said to me, when has it become okay to not honor your word? And this is
that's,
you know,
an interesting question.
Yeah, and this is so interesting. And it wasn't even in the context of a person to a person. It was very much in the view of a corporate, and an engagement between one business and another business. And, you know, sort of we had a philosophical discussion around how to deal with this personally. Another thing somebody has sort of brought up for me was we started talking about character. And I started thinking about, you know, when is it okay not to honor your word, and what are the consequences? And what actually is the capital, what is the value of having character and developing character, but then standing for something? And, you know, for me, when we talk about what is a good activist, it's like, check your facts, have character.
Well,
you know.
Well, that, yeah, in my example, that was exactly the point, check the facts in your examples. I think, you know, you used the expression earlier, being economic or with the truth. What was you saying is that people struggling with the truth.
Yeah, yes.
And you know, I think to myself, sure, you know, and that can be by omission or commission.
Indeed.
You know, intentionally or otherwise. If you don't have the facts, it's a real struggle. And I mean, to your point of, you know, how binding is your word in a corporate space? I mean, I fairly frequently have kind of found myself going, I would love to be able to do business on a handshake, but nowadays you can't. Okay, there are a few, and I recently have done fairly big transactions on a handshake with somebody that I trust impeccably. But I think to myself, those sort of things are very, very rare.
Yes.
You know, to be honest with you, I think the contract was concluded officially, if you consider when contracts are concluded, by the meeting of the minds.
Yes.
When I emojied back a handshake on my on my WhatsApp.
I like that.
So we've digitized ethics.
An emoji handshake is now considered the contractual inception, yes.
I like that.
Yeah. But that talks to high levels of ethics between my organization and my company and him and his organization and company.
Yes.
Now, I mean, when we talk about ethical, and let's just for a moment, as we wind up the show, talk about ethical responsibility. I mean, people go, well, I don't want to get involved. Don't involve me.
I
don't want to be an activist. I don't want to be out there. And then there are people, and we're going to, in the next part of the show, we're going to be talking to Wayne Devenacher from OTA. And there are people out there who've actually gone there and said, hey, let's do this. Oto is one of them. I mean, they've got, I mean, if I look at their projects that they've got, state capture, communication, energy, government policy, transport, water and environment. I mean, they've got a whole lot of stuff going on. Why? Because they're just going, you know, let's stand up and be counted here. And, you know, we have a responsibility to engage.
Yeah.
Where's the line? Who should be doing this? Who shouldn't? Whose job is it, Cynthia? Oh. Is it mine? Is it yours? Or is it the CEO's job to...
It's a fabulous question. Let me answer it in two ways. Let's start with OTA. I think that the very many scandals of the past, public and private sector, I mean, in both camps, I think have given real impetus to a lot of NGO and NPO type organizations who really, really need to be recognized for the fabulous work they're doing. And whether that's OTA, whether it's Section 27, I mean, who are playing an invaluable role in the Isidemeni investigations that happened last year. But there are many organizations, the Helen Suzman Foundation, Corruption Watch, these organizations are playing a hugely valuable role. So to speak more directly to your question of, okay, whose role is it? Whose job is it? What should we do? One very, very clear answer. All these NGOs that are providing such a valuable sort of civil protest action role, mm-hmm. frankly, let's support them. Mm-hmm. They all are based on donor funding. Let's support them to whatever extent we can. That's one practical suggestion. Within organizations, though, I come back to our hashtag for this whole series of shows of Keep Ethics Alive. Within organizations, it's so easy to get completely overwhelmed by one scandal after the next. And really, not only overwhelmed, demotivated and the like. And so I think organizations, I personally see it as a huge responsibility, where they literally should be making sure that within their organizations, they are doing something that is making ethics visible. Literally, that despite all the scandals, in that environment, they are literally keeping ethics alive. Whether it's holding
the high road.
Exactly. And promoting it. So this is not only about can we write a stricter rule. This is around speaking to what's positive and wonderful about ethics. Having those conversations, you know, facilitating those focus groups, making sure that ethics is not something ethereal that we think must happen somewhere, maybe elsewhere. We should be making a concerted effort in our organizations to make it visible. And I would put the challenge out there for organizations in terms of 2018. I think they need to start making the sort of ethics New Year's resolution. And I think it should be, what are we going to do to promote ethics, not just to police it? What are we going to do to promote ethics going forward? And I would put it to you that the smallest to the largest organization can do something.
That's very true. Cynthia, thank you very much. Really appreciate your insights. Thanks for joining us. Next up is our conversation with the chairman of OTA, Wayne Devenacher. Stay with us.
This is CliffCentral.com.